My name is Caitlin, and my husband Cameron went to go grab some flyers, I think. But we run a refugee ministry in Dallas that we can talk more about. But I would love to just get a very quick introduction from everyone, if that would be okay, just so I know, are you already working with immigrants? You know, I don't want to say a lot of things that you already know. So if we could start with Pat, that would be great. Just a quick, if you say your name and maybe like what you do or why you're here and what you know about refugees. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. We know you. Yeah, go ahead.
And David, sorry, one more question. Sorry, and I just had a question for him because most of the people were just at yours. Do you work mainly with Fort Worth Perez or do you work with a
no,
bunch of
he's
different
Baptist.
Churches?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry,
many
I missed
work
the first.
For many different churches,
okay.
Even actually California, New York, New Jersey, Mississippi,
okay.
They come here and
uh-huh.
Yeah.
Together.
Okay, yeah.
I just said group houses.
Okay, great.
Make sure that everything Caitlin said for the last 20 minutes is on tape.
Yeah.
So we do everything Mrs. Hatch tells us.
That's right.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Kevin Gladding, I work down at Christ King Presbyterian Church in Duncanville.
Okay.
And honestly, yeah.
With Patrick. Oh,
that's
yay.
Great. And I'm here honestly because I know of you.
Okay.
Great thing, so
okay, great. Go ahead.
On my turn,
yes.
Steve Tenpenny, I'm also from Park City Presbyterian.
Yes, great.
Past done ESL, we've jumped back into ESL, so that's pretty much our exposure to immigrants right now.
Yes.
Kirk DeWar, I work for Redeemer Seminary. I don't know a whole lot to the immigrants, but.
That's okay.
Yet.
Yet. Yet, that's right.
I'm Caleb Dunn. I have a small swimming pool cleaning and maintenance business, and so I work with a lot of immigrants that also.
Uh-huh. Okay, great. Thank you, guys. That helps me to know what, you know, what you're coming in the room knowing. And Cameron and I go to New St. Peter's Presbyterian Church in Dallas. We came into the PCA a few years ago. We've always grown, we grew up in Dallas, so we've been around Dallas for a while. And I'm just going to kind of talk a little bit about how our ministry got started, and hopefully that will give you all maybe an idea of how you could be involved with immigrants or refugees in whatever sphere that you are in, whether that's through us or not through us, or, you know, however that works out for you. I want to actually show a quick video. I apologize. I'm going to turn the light out for just a moment for us to watch the video. It's quick, just to give you a picture of the people. So here it goes.
I am a son.
I am a daughter.
I am a father. I am a refugee. My country was ripped apart by war.
I had to flee my home in the middle of the night.
I was forced to leave everything behind.
I had no choice.
We had no choice.
I am a refugee.
I've known hunger and starvation.
I've been abused.
I've known sorrow and pain. My children were stolen from me.
My family was taken away.
I'm all alone.
I'm all alone.
I am a refugee.
I wasn't taught how to read or write. I never had the opportunity.
I was placed in your country, but I didn't know the language.
I didn't know how to cry out for help.
I worked hard to get here, but I can't read a job application.
I'm a hard worker,
I'm a stranger in a foreign land.
I am a refugee. I want something better for my children. I want them to be safe and secure. I'm desperate for a better life.
I want to feel dignity.
I want to feel hope.
I want to feel hope.
I want to belong.
I'm desperate.
I need help.
I need help.
I am a refugee.
I'm a refugee.
I am a refugee.
I am your neighbor.
Will you help me?
Will you help me?
Will you help me?
That's the end. So perfect. oh, there we go. okay, so hopefully that just gives you a picture of the people if you've not worked with refugees. And I think were most of you at Pat's seminar this morning? I don't want to go into... Okay, I'll just do a little brief. She also showed this same chart at hers.
There we go.
I'm sorry, y'all. Go ahead.
You talk.
Yeah, view, slideshow. That should do it. There we go. No? Okay. You want to figure it out for me?
Sure.
Okay. All right, he's going to figure it out for me. So I guess I'll start then with just how For the Nations got started, and maybe that can give you some inspiration for, again, how you could maybe work with refugees in your community. I used to be a kindergarten teacher in the Richardson area where I grew up, just a few miles from the school that I went to growing up. And when I was there, it was completely homogenous, almost entirely white, certainly middle class or upper middle class. And when I came back to teach there, I had 22 students, and I only had one who spoke English. Six of my students spoke Spanish, and the others spoke all different languages. And so it was a different world that I stepped into to teach than the one that I had grown up in, even though it was just a few minutes from my parents' house where they still live today. And so that, you know, posed a lot of challenges, obviously. My students were coming from families that didn't know English, they didn't have any educational background, and so they were really struggling. They didn't know how to do even the most basic things. It's okay if it doesn't work. And so how I first kind of stepped into the refugee situation, I had a little girl in my class, and she came to school one day, and she had walked to school, and she had fallen down in a puddle. She didn't have a coat, and it was cold. It was December or January, and she was crying, and just because she was cold. And so I said, this is not acceptable for my little five-year-old to be in here just shivering in my class. And so I asked one of the teachers, you know, one of the other teachers who'd been teaching for 25 years, can I go and like visit her home and see what's happening in her family? And the teacher was like, oh yeah, that's great. You know, we used to do home visits all the time. You should do that. So I said, okay. So I went to her house after school and knocked on her door and said, you know, and opened the door and said, could I take Sharifa to go get a coat? And when I opened the door, there were six little faces looking at me, all young children. Their home had no furniture. They had no food in their pantry. And the little babies were running around their diapers, no clothes. And so I just thought, what is this situation that I have walked into that I was unaware of, you know, that I've lived minutes from my whole life? And what, you know, why is this happening here in our city? So I took the little girl and her sister to get a coat. As I was bringing them home, all these little faces in the apartment complex are looking out the windows at me, and they know me because they're all kids that go to the school where I teach. And so they're all saying, Miss Mullins, you know, and I'm like, what's happening, you know? And all these little kids from all different countries are kind of, you know, waving to me, and I drop the little girl and her sister off and just realize the situation that they're in. Many years later, I find out that these are all refugees who've been resettled by those resettlement agencies that you heard David mention, and they're placed in these apartment complexes, and the program used to be a five-year resettlement program to get refugees acclimated, and it had been, many years ago, and it had been slowly kind of cut down to now refugees only receive 1 to 3 months of help from their resettlement agency. And so it was kind of the time when a lot of those benefits were being just cut down to a shorter time period. And so these refugee families had found themselves in the situation where they were not self-sustaining yet, and their aid had ended. And so that's why they were living in this extreme sort of poverty situation. And it was really from that one student that we got involved in the ministry that we have today. So it happened gradually over time, but Cameron and I would go and visit other students that were in my class. He was in seminary at the time.
And
at DTS.
Like, refugees, and I'm like, do we need to report them?
Yeah, he didn't know. Like, we just didn't know who was a refugee and what are they doing here. And, you know, we didn't know anything about it, really. And so as we were kind of getting into the work, discovered, like, this was a family from Somali. They were Muslims. They'd been in America 1 or 2 years at that point. And then we met more of my students who were from Sudan. And then we started to meet, you know, refugees from Asia and from Eritrea. And then finally, now we have lots of refugees from the Middle East. And so, you know, we kind of started learning about who they were and what their needs were, and really saw their academic needs as a teacher, of course. And so we started helping them after school, doing tutoring, just helping my students with just basic alphabet and things like that. And then the parents started saying, we don't know the alphabet either. Can you help us? And so we said, okay, sure. So they would come and sit in my kindergarten classroom and learn the alphabet with their children. And then we ended up moving kind of that after, you know, evening stuff to our home. And we would have them a couple times a week, and we would teach them English and literacy and how to, you know, hold their pencils and just basic things. But we always included a Bible lesson during that. So we always, you know, I felt the freedom when I wasn't at school to say, okay, well, I'm not a teacher right now, so I'm going to share the gospel with these families. And so we always included either a story, a Bible story, or just a gospel presentation or Bible lesson in all the things that we were doing. Yeah, we've always had a pretty big Muslim population coming. It used to be more from Somalia and, you know, the mid to north part of Sudan. Now it's all Middle Eastern, and still we have a few Somali and Sudanese Muslims, but they're mostly not being resettled anymore. Mostly it's now Middle Easterners who are coming. And so it was a great opportunity to share with them, because like both of the previous presenters have mentioned, when they're coming to America, they're really questioning, what is my identity? And what is it that I believe? And they've already taken the, if I could get those up, it'd be really helpful, but.
You can see.
If you. Yeah. No, it's not going to work. Slideshow.
It's going to be purple.
Dang it. Okay. Can't win them all. Okay. It's from the video, I think. Here, we'll show this picture. Okay. So this is like the little Somali. This is not her, but she was a little girl just like this that I started ministry with. And so now kind of this is what we see on a daily basis with refugees. And like Pat mentioned, refugees are really, they've already taken this step out of their country. And so they're saying, okay, this isn't working, you know, what I've grown up with. And I'm willing to like be brave and go into this Western world that I might have heard negative things about, that I might view as having hurt my culture, you know. And so they're the people that are willing to say, I'm going to take that risk and I'm going to do that. And so they tend to be more open to hearing the gospel because of that. And so we have lots and lots of people coming from non-Christian backgrounds who they're not necessarily coming for the Bible lessons that we're doing during class, but they're certainly not opposed to them. And so they're coming for help with things like English and literacy and citizenship, but they're staying and hearing the gospel message, which we share overtly with words and also, of course, with Mercy Ministry and helping in their needs.
And so our first day when they come to class is, hey, you know, we're Christians. You have come to America, like, and you know, you're looking for English for your hope, and you need it, but our hope isn't found in English, and we know plenty of people with English and money, and they still have problems, because that's not where the solution is or where our hope is. And so we're going to teach you about Jesus and about Christianity, because that's where your real hope that you're looking for is. Like, you don't have to believe it to come, because some of their countries, like, there's certain, like, you can only receive services if you're a certain religion, but we want you to believe it. And so that kind of then gives us permission to,
right. to be, yeah. you know, quite evangelical with our ministry. And so from, you know, over time, slowly we developed these different programs for refugees that we saw were needed over and over again, always, you know, and eventually developed into kind of three different areas. So everything that we do now fits into either education, which is like English literacy, citizenship, after-school programs, summer program for kids, newcomer program, you know, all of those things, preschool, fall into the educational component. And then, or there's an acculturation component of, like, they used to bring me stacks of mail, and they would just set it down here and say, like, I don't know what this is. And so I would sort through their mail and say, well, this is an advertisement for Pizza Hut. You should throw that away. And this is your Social Security card. You should keep that for later. And so just basic, if that gives you an idea of the kind of help that they're needing with, you know, any kind of registering for anything, their children for school, getting immunizations, you know, going to doctor's appointments, applying for a driver's license, just finding the store, learning about, you know, U.S. currency and how to use that, budgeting, all the things that you have as an American to live here, they need help with when they come into a new culture. And so that kind of all falls under our acculturation umbrella. And then, of course, our last and our third thing, but most important, is sharing the gospel. So all of those things that we're doing includes some way for them to hear the good news. And, you know, we do that through, like I said, overtly, but also through relationships. We have tons of volunteers and staff that know refugees, that visit them in their homes, and that have the opportunity to share the gospel with them, in addition to the fact that they're hearing a Bible lesson every day. And so we'll see a lot of people start out. You know, there's different categories. We'll see Muslims start out, and when we ask, do we have sin, they'll say no, because if they admit that, then they might not be going to heaven. And so at the beginning, they'll say, no, no, no. Yes, every person has shortcomings and makes mistakes, but we don't really have sin. It's just kind of accidental, you know, our shortcomings. And so even
you just
seeing...
stop, then you can go to heaven.
And in fact, we heard an imam say to a group of people not too long ago, the way for you to know about your salvation is just to stop sinning. Just stop sinning, and then you're saved. And so that's just ridiculous, right? And so, yes.
Hey, what's just blowing me away? You're talking to us in our language.
Right.
Are they talking to you? They're not talking to you in English so much, or very little.
Right.
English, right?
Yeah.
So you're able to understand what they're trying to communicate to you.
Right. Refugees? Yeah. So well, we have lots of varying levels of English. So I obviously present really differently when I'm talking to refugees because I have to speak slowly, I have to use different vocabulary to make sure that they understand. And so, no, not all, but we have this varying level. We start, like our English classes start at level one and we go all the way to GED. So the students taking the GED, they're very fluent in English. They're, you know, they can read and write and speak to you and have a conversation easily. The students coming in at level one, they can't say hello. And so we've got this kind of varying degree, but in every language that we serve, there is someone who can translate. And so, you know, all of the languages that we work with, there's somebody who's been here longer, or there's somebody who came as an immigrant, not a refugee, that can translate into Arabic, for example. And so there's always a way to communicate with refugees. It might be the child who's been in school for a year or two and who's picked up a lot of English, and now the child can translate for the parents. But we can always communicate, even if it's, you know, through a translator or slowly or however. But yes, that's a great question. And please interrupt me. I like that. Okay, so yes, our Iraqis, they'll come from, you know, not admitting that they have sin, and then you'll see them slowly progress towards being able to say, you know, during the Bible lesson, you'll ask the group of students, so what is our problem? And they'll answer, sin. Which is a huge step in the right direction because they previously did not even admit that they had sin, right?
Why is there fighting in your country? And it wasn't because of just a government change. It's
right.
Because there's fighting everywhere.
Right.
Like, there's fighting in our homes and, you know, in every culture. It doesn't matter how great the government is or how well the finances are running because the problem is an internal problem.
Right. And so even, you know, things that... That's a huge change that we've seen in an entire group of people, really, who didn't admit before that they had sin, who now do. So you'll have that situation. You'll have a situation of, like, Sudanese refugees who identify as Christians, but maybe didn't have a Bible and think that Jesus lived 80 years ago. And so with those Christians, they're just very, have minimal levels of education. So trying to help them understand and walk through what are the doctrines that we hold to, what is it that we believe as Christians, and encouraging them to communicate that to their community. That's also kind of a role that we have with our fellow believers from other countries that are coming to America. And, you know, of course, to the ones who are not believing.
And real quick, as we're talking about Dallas, mm-hmm. I find this super interesting.
Great.
Is, like, this is a... nearly perfect map of Dallas.
the Dallas was in Texas?
Exactly.
Yeah.
it's like a little time. Anyway, so here's downtown. Well, there's the major highways that come out of downtown for those who are not from the area. But you have 75 that comes up this way, then you have 30 that goes over this way. And then there's this big lake over here. Well, the resettlement agencies are, there's three of them, and every city really can't have more than three. And so we have, this is Catholic Charities, this is IRC, and this is RST. Well, right here in the very hub of them is called the Vickery Meadows area. This is where, most of the time, David, you talked about this one. This is where you have about 20,000 refugees. Like, and they're all very condensed together. But in the greater Dallas area, and if you included Fort Worth as well, then you're talking well over 200,000 refugees. And so what happened after Vickery Meadows got filled up about 10 years ago is that they started going out this way because they couldn't go this way because of there's not development, and this area is the really
wealthy,
rich part of Dallas.
Maybe so you're aware of it.
Our house where Caitlin was a teacher was right here. And we didn't know it at the time, but we were saying, why is it that lots of people have heard about Vickery Meadows in the Dallas area when you say about refugees, and yet there are 50,000 refugees up here, and they're isolated, and there's no services for them, and like the government doesn't know about them? Like, what's going on up here? Because that's not the situation down here. So we kind of accidentally, and this was about 10 years ago, like, Caitlin found this whole, like, these pockets by being a teacher of refugees that were just, no one even knew they were there. And so that's kind of how, like, she fell into the ministry to begin with.
Yeah. And that's a great map. And like, yeah, you're welcome. But it helps clarify that Vickery area, and which is a hugely concentrated population where a lot of churches are working. But then there's refugees all this way where almost no one really is working. And there, it's a little bit more challenging. They're not necessarily all in one apartment complex, and so that creates some challenges. But it's really important to be reaching the people that way as well because there's so many of them. So the U.S., so pre-9/11 was resettling 100,000 refugees, and then post-9/11 a year, and then post-9/11 cut the program way back to maybe in the 40,000s, and slowly has been increasing that number to where we're almost back up to 80,000, and with the additional Syrian refugees, we should be around 85,000 refugees this year. And Dallas, Houston and Dallas have the number, have the first and second most number of refugees, but they're in every major city because after they're resettled, they're free to move. And so any major, you know, urban place that has jobs that refugees could get, you can find refugees. So wherever you live, they are nearby you. They're in every city. They're in every state. And even sometimes smaller cities and towns have refugee populations as well, depending on the resettlement agencies that are in your state. And so they're an extremely important group of people to reach, and they're a very open group of people coming not from Christian backgrounds that are open to hearing about Christianity because of the situation that they're in. They're questioning, like David said, who am I and what am I doing here? I've taken this step into a new country. You know, I'm willing to kind of change my identity, and so I'm willing to listen when you talk about Christ. We recently ran across an Iraqi man who said that someone had given him a Bible in Iraq, and he had been reading it, and then he kind of had stopped reading it, and then he started coming to our English classes where we have scripture readings every day, and he'd picked up his Bible again to start reading it. We've had a couple of other, just a few days ago, yeah, we got a really encouraging message from some Somali girls that we reached out to, you know, 9.5 years ago and haven't heard from in several years. We didn't know if they had ever become Christians. We had spent so much time with them. We had taken them to church. We had gone to their families. And then they moved away and we hadn't heard from them in a few years. Just got a Facebook message from them saying, hey, I remember when you came to my apartment complex and shared the gospel with me at like a VBS time. And my sister and brother and I are all Christians and we attend this church now. And we're so thankful that you reached out to us to share us Jesus. Yeah, I mean, very solid, right? Yeah. Believing Somali girls. I mean, that's amazing. Like, you just don't find that. And so they're in a place that you would be surprised at how receptive they are. And it sounds like you're experiencing the same thing here, where, you know, you think, if I go and present the gospel to Muslims, like, surely somebody's going to, like, I don't know, commit jihad or run out or something. And really, that has not been our experience. They're very willing to listen and hear and open to the gospel, and there have been some that have believed and many that have been interested in Christianity. And so, you know, I would encourage anyone who's interested to do this. This kind of goes through our...
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just tell you. Yeah. It goes through our mission. So For the Nations is trying to bridge that gap. So the resettlement agencies like Catholic Charities, IRC, RST, World Relief, those people are funded by the government. Usually about 98% of their funding comes from the government. And they are resettling refugees from the camps to Dallas, to your state. And then they have a very short resettlement period, like 30 to 90 days. And after that, the resettlement agency is bringing more people that they have to keep up with and meet the immediate kind of emergency relief needs. And so For the Nations is trying to step in, you know, sometime in that first 30 days, meet the families, and then be with them, walk with them from the time that they come to America to the time that they're kind of self-sustaining, which is great because that gives us enough time to share the gospel with them. Because it takes longer than 30 days for them to become fully self-sustaining, right? They're coming here, you can't even get a paycheck in 30 days. I mean, let alone like apply for your Social Security card and receive it and find a job and get trained in that skill and go to work and get, I mean, it just takes longer than that. And so during the time that they're doing that and they're acquiring English skills and they're, you know, getting job training, we're kind of stepping in and helping them along that way. And then that gives us the platform and the time to share the gospel with them. Because, you know, we have not had a lot of Muslims come to faith after one time of hearing the gospel. It's not a one-time thing. But when we can be there day after day after day, 4 days a week, we're sharing with them, that really changes what they believe. And then over time, we've seen lots of people come to faith. And so it's a good thing that they need help for that period of time because that gives us the platform in which to share the gospel with them. And then our goals are to teach English literacy and life skills to refugees, to help acculturate them, to share the gospel, and to connect them to the community. So that's what I'm doing here today, making you aware of the refugees that exist in your community and hoping to connect you to them. Because sometimes I know it can be easy to be in your community and not necessarily, and you're thinking, where is my end to knowing refugee people? But I would encourage you to try to find that connection wherever you are because they are there and you can find it. And then this is kind of how we do that. I've already mentioned a lot of these things, but through helping with all the educational needs that exist with early childhood education, support for school-age children and adults, helping acculturate them, and really being that community for them. Many refugees are lonely. It's a time when they come and they might have family back in their home country. So they're like, yes, I have 3 of my children here, but my 2 oldest children, they were over the age of 21, and so they're still back in my home country, and I really miss them, and my mother and father are there. And so it's a time, too, when you can come alongside them and provide that community that they're really missing. And churches are great at that. I mean, they have a great community to bring people and welcome people into.
In America, it's hard to find community not in a church.
Right.
Like, we don't have, you know, a local theater that we just walk down to every evening.
Right.
And it's really the time we see our friends is kind of when we go to church.
Right.
So this is where to bring them into the community, we kind of have to bring them into
right.
the church.
Right. You know, exactly. Right, right. And then for us, just a model that we've adopted is always including some structured and unstructured gospel opportunities. So I would really encourage you all as well, if you're pursuing ministry with immigrants and refugees, to include that structured gospel time too, because sometimes if you leave it up to, yeah, whenever your relationship allows for it, share the gospel, then you might not do it. So providing that structure to, this is the time when we sit down and we talk about scripture, or we sit down and we talk about God. It has been really helpful to us to also, with some of those people that you might be like, I don't know how they're going to receive this. If they know up front, we're going to do this every day, then it's just not really that big of a deal, you know, and they'll sit down with you and read the Bible, and that's kind of just what we do, and that's the expectation from the beginning. So kind of including that structured time and then allowing for the relationships as well for the unstructured gospel sharing time, something that we've found to be successful. We have a great message that I think we sometimes forget that we have. We've walked into homes before that are physically actually dark, right? Like their light bulbs have burned out and their curtains are drawn because they're afraid, and their home is physically dark. And it's also spiritually dark. You hear the Muslim prayer going off. You see them, you know, prostrating to, because it's like sometimes it's a mix of like Islam and like ancestor worship kind of thing. And so you'll see like pictures of their family with incense and they're praying the Muslim prayer but to the picture. And it's just like can be very spiritually dark as well. And we have a great message. I mean, we really do. Christ has come and has redeemed us. And so how could we not share that with people who are in such a dark place, who are willing to hear. And I think we forget that sometimes. So that's one of the whys of why to help refugees, because we have a great, great message to share. We also want to avoid potential problems that can be created with a lot of immigrants who are needy and poor coming to the community. If refugees are not kind of given that support, they can slide into that generational poverty. So a lot of our families that we're helping, they're not necessarily in generational poverty when they come. They have a situation that happened to them. So a lot of the people that we help might have been in the middle class in their country, or they might have been poor, but they were a farmer and they were making a wage and feeding their family. And then when they come here, it's easy for them to, if they don't get those job skills and things that they need to survive in America, sort of slip down into that generational poverty, which is not, it's something we want to avoid, because then it's very, very difficult for them to get out of that.
And that happens because what do the kids learn? Well, they learn where the food stamp box is. Like, this is something I don't even know where it is. If someone's like, I need to apply for food stamps, it's like, okay, you need to get talk to someone else. Or like, what's the cutoff line of, you know, oh, if I make more than this, then I'm going to lose more money than I'm going to make. And so they just start to learn all those skill sets of the lower socioeconomic class. And so, but that's not the skill sets that they're coming in with. And so it's a time to step in to say, let's keep this going so that you don't slip into that mode, which
yeah.
is easy to do.
Right. And I mean, when we do that, then it really adds to our community, truly, because then you find communities of people who are vibrant and who are really contributing to the society, and they add to the community with the diversity that they bring and the different perspective that they bring. And so we really find that addition when they are kind of appropriately helped and adapted in the beginning. And of course, you know, the thing that we're hoping for is also just gospel-believing communities of people who are internationals. And that's what, you know, what we are beginning to see and what we hope to continue seeing, and just another reason to step in and help refugees to add to our gospel community of believers as well. This is a picture of some of the students that were in citizenship class. We've had many of our refugees pass the citizenship test and become American citizens, which is a great, proud moment for them, and it's really exciting. So it's a great thing to do as well. So if you're thinking kind of how can I get involved in this or what can I do, I would just encourage you to kind of assess your city, wherever you live, find out what's going on there already, what agencies are resettling refugees there, what nonprofits, what churches are working with refugees, how can you partner with them, how can you get involved in that.
Finding out what's going on is really important. Like, it'd be really easy to come to Fort Worth and be like, no one's doing anything with refugees in Fort Worth, right? And it's like, well, David's been working here for, how many years have you been with the Fountains?
4 years.
Yeah, for 4 years, right, doing wonderful work. And so really putting in some of the upfront time to figure out what's going on already, not just what my denomination is doing or, you know, the groups I know, but like what is, you know, happening here.
Yeah, and how can we add to that and work with that and make that better, and, you know, how can our church get involved in that? It is really important, I think. And then just coming up with a plan for both meeting needs and sharing the gospel, because we really need to do both of those things together. The community is a needy community, and so how do we love them? Well, we can help meet their needs, but also if we do that and forget to tell them the good news that we have, well, then that's not good. So we need to do both of those things together, really meeting a need and sharing the gospel. And also, one thing that you can do is we are a short-term mission trip site for the MNA. So if you are interested in coming on a short-term mission trip, you can do that through For the Nations to Dallas. And you can do it with your youth group or with a group of adults, either during the summer or during the year. So there's a lot of opportunity there. Could be a great way for you to kind of see how it is, you know, working and how it's going, and then maybe take some of that back to wherever you're coming from. And so anyway, just all that to say, we would love to help you get started in that, or connect you or work with you to reach out to immigrants and refugees in your neighborhood. Refugees are really small. I mean, they're a piece of the immigrant puzzle, but they're just one piece. And there are a lot of other pieces of that puzzle as well. There's international student ministry. There's ministry to other immigrants who aren't refugees. So For the Nations works with mostly refugees, but we have some asylees, we have some just immigrants who need help. We're not 100% refugee, although we are mostly, but there are other organizations in the area that are doing ministry to other kinds of immigrants. So,
find
Yes, yes, and Pat would be even better at that, but I can. Refugee versus asylee. Refugees are... Okay, yes. Actually, I have a little chart here. Okay.
I can draw it if we
can. Okay, so there's a picture here. Okay, so this is... These are all... This piece right here is all legal immigrants. So documented immigrants, this whole section. This one is undocumented immigrants, so people who've either come across the border illegally or they've come legally and then let their legal status expire, which is about half of this group.
So the first group,
yes.
They're part of the quota that's coming into the United States.
Okay, yes. Refugees have a quota every year. So there's 80,000, 85,000 maybe this year, refugees. That's the quota. They're coming here every year, resettled by the government. And they fall...
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is the government determined a certain number per country?
Per state or per... Oh, yeah. They do by region. So they'll say, we're going to take...
So the 85,000...
Mm-hmm. They're going to take 10,000 Syrians. They're going to take 30,000 from Asia. They're going to take... So they do. They do determine within that number, like they allot numbers for each region. I don't know that they go specifically to country. Do you know, Pat?
No.
Okay, just region. So Asia, Middle East, yeah.
It's funny, I mean, whatever your view on immigration is, but, like, there's been a lot of freak out about increasing the number of refugees by 10,000, and it's like... We're still under the 90,000 cap that we've brought in for many, many years. You know,
pre 9/11, so it's not
75,000, and it's like, you know, that's still
tech
within.
Help is here if you want to show it.
Oh, okay, great. It's just not going up. So if we can figure it out, great. If not, that's okay. Yeah. So okay, Pat has drawn it for us. Thank you so much. And so this is the undocumented immigrants that are in the U.S. But about half of, not all of these came to the United States illegally, right? Some of them came legally, and then their status has just expired. That's this group. Refugees are not in this group. Refugees are in this group. They're legal permanent residents. So these people have come legally, and they're permanent, but they're not yet citizens. That's where refugees fall. Then they can become citizens. So this is immigrants who have become naturalized citizens. Refugees, among other immigrants, can become U.S. citizens. And so then after 5 years, a refugee can become a citizen. So that then they would change from this category to this category. And Pat explained it well. This is a snapshot in time that's always changing, depending on who came over on the airplane today, who became a naturalized citizen today, who let their legal status expire today, right? This is always changing. It's a snapshot. But refugees, their status does not expire. They're always either legal permanent residents in this category, or they're in this category of becoming citizens. And then this one is people who have been given temporary legal status. So if they were in the United States and then something happened in their country that made it where they is not safe to go back, then the U.S. has given them a temporary protected status, temporary status, right? So they can stay here, not permanently, but they are legal.
But that also includes international students.
Yeah.
Diplomats.
Mm-hmm.
And temporary workers. And
yeah.
Asylum.
Okay, great. What? Do you want to? Yeah. She's better. And they have to prove that they have a like well-founded fear of persecution based on their race, ethnicity, nationality, or religion. Did I get them all?
Or political opinion. So when they get to this country to what we would call customs or whatever, what happens when they get to this country? Is there someone from state or DHS or one of the resettlement or that meet them and then...
It was me on Tuesday. So... Yeah, the resettlement agency, like, they're contracted with the state. Is that right?
With the State Department.
State Department, okay.
U.S. Department of State.
And so they're getting the funding to actually pay the caseworker, right, to go and meet the family at the airport. However, they tend to be overworked and underfunded. And so sometimes they call for the nations, right, and we go and meet a refugee at the airport with one of the resettlement agencies that we've been working with. So that's who's actually, like, picking them up from the airport, taking them to their apartment. You know, they're responsible for making sure they have food when they get to America and furniture and things like that. However, after 30 to 90 days, that period is over for that family. And so if, let's say you get a job, but you don't understand that your shift is 8 to 5 instead of like AM instead of 8 to 5, you know, night shift. And so you miss a few days and you get fired, but then your case is done with your resettlement agencies because you've been here more than 90 days. And now you're like in a pretty emergency situation because you've only been in the country a very short time. You don't know how to fill out a paper to apply for a job. Okay, so what do you do? And so that's kind of why For the Nation started, because it was all of those type of situations that were like kept coming up where it was like, we don't know what's going on. And so, yeah. But that answers your question of who picks them up. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Asylees are people who are already in the country who are seeking refugees, like the same kind of status, legal permanent resident status, but they're already in the country. So, and I have only a couple of examples of this, but we have a couple of Syrians who were here when the conflict started, and so they were seeking asylum and granted asylum. Exactly. So it's not a temporary status, it's a permanent status, but they start seeking it after they're already here. Refugees are granted their status in the country, not their home country, but the one they've run into. They're given refugee status when they're there, so before they get here.
Where does the visa U fit into all of that?
She would know better.
Okay. The U visa is a kind of a victim of crime or victim of trafficking, or no, T visa is victim of trafficking.
Yeah. Yay! Thank you. Thank you so much.
The person can eventually become a permanent resident, but it's not a refugee status.
Yeah. Do you have some people, yeah, who have that? I'm not surprised about that. So now For the Nations works with about 1,800 refugees annually. We see about 500 in the week between kind of all the different things that are going on. We have 15 staff. We work with about 450 volunteers during the year. And so clearly there was a need, right? Like, and that's what, of course, you know, God has placed these people here on purpose and he's put us here on purpose and everything has happened because of him. And because there was a need also. And so through meeting that need, we've kind of had the platform to share the gospel with people who we could have never shared with, probably. If we had tried to go to Iraq, we probably would have been killed, right? And gone into the refugee camps where they are. I mean, God can do anything, but he has brought them here, and we are safe in our homes, right? Like, sharing the gospel with people who may never have heard. And so it's a great, great opportunity. So I would just encourage you all to seek it out wherever you are, and don't be afraid, because it's not that hard, you know.
And this one we're really excited about, Pat, here, because yes, it shows that the PCA is continually taking steps to say, okay, the PCA needs to start thinking outside what it has traditionally been thinking in. And so, and Pat is just the example of it realizes that there's whole groups of people that aren't being met. Mm-hmm. And so the first step has to be awareness, mm-hmm, as moving forward,
yes,
in engaging them. And then also our ministry started before we were even PCA, and so we work to help focus efforts of many churches to say, what do we do with refugees? Because lots of times churches will try to recreate the wheel on their own, say, especially the larger churches, because they say, we have enough resources, we can bring on a staff person. And so, but again, they don't always know what else is going on in the area, or who to contact to find out those networks. And so,
yeah,
this is why we like, the screen here behind you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, yeah, resources. These four are resettlement agencies. World Relief is here in Fort Worth. These two are in Dallas and Fort Worth. And then IRC is in Dallas, I think, only. Is that correct? Only in Dallas, yeah.
Uh-huh. Which your RST gets their money.
Okay. Yeah, it's allotted to them.
Episcopal Migration Ministry, and then there's a bunch of others that are not church-related.
Yeah, and there's Catholic Charities all over the nation. Yeah. And so in many, many cities, there's Catholic Charities that are allotted the USCCB things. So we also have Pat Hatch, who is a wonderful resource. And so she's the M&A Refugee and Immigrant Ministry person, and she worked with refugees for 13 years in a running a nonprofit. And then with the state. 16 years. Okay.
16 years with
And then 13 years of the state. So she knows more than we will ever know. It's great.
And one hot summer delivering school
students. That's right. In one summer. Yes. A book that we found helpful that's been mentioned today is When Helping Hurts. We also have created some Bible curriculum that we've loosely named Just Picture Theology, which we use with refugees. So it's a very easy English scripture that we pass out that's kind of been put into easy English so that they can understand it, and then pictures that go with it. And so through those scriptures and pictures, you know, we've been able to communicate the gospel pretty clearly. We also have one that we've used for kids over the summer program. There's a lot of lessons that go with it, and it's really been effective in trying to communicate the gospel message to refugees. So if you would like that, we can certainly get that for you. This is just... Yeah, the benefit to that is that we have so many languages that taking the time to translate into every language would take forever. And part of the incentive for some of the students to come is it's English. And so we're saying, okay, let's read the scripture in English then, but we're going to make it easy enough for you to understand. And then those are just some of the curriculum that we've been using for our English classes that we found beneficial. And then Mosaic Family Services, I can't remember why I have them on. They have a lot of services for refugees when it comes to acculturation needs. So yes, these are some resources that you can utilize if you like. Are there any other questions that we could answer? Yes.
Where is your base of operations?
So we rent two churches. Yeah. We rent a church, like right there and right there.
No. Oh. Where's our church?
The two churches. Yeah, yeah.
Oh no, this is 6:35. I know. Caitlin's not.
I'm not good with directions. Yeah, this side of the lake, of course, yes.
So we're up here, we rent a
two churches.
And then an Ethiopian church that's right here.
Yeah.
So we have two campuses that
So
operate.
Is this like off of Abrams Road?
Close to Abrams, yeah. Jupiter. One's on Jupiter and Walnut Hill.
Okay.
And then the other one is like just a little bit from Plano and Forest, just a little bit northeast of that. So
okay.
Pretty close
to
that.
I'm intrigued by this because you drew those dots where the immigration services. My house is like right in the middle of all
of Where's your house?
Lake Highlands.
Yeah. Okay, we have refugees in Lake Highlands.
Yeah.
Lots of Burmese.
So I heard you bought property. Where is that?
Yes. Okay, so it is like less than a mile from where we're currently meeting. It's on just north on the north side of Forest, like it's on Forest, on the north side between Plano and Jupiter.
So we bought 3 acres because we have a 100-person list to get into our classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to, even though we have about 110 to 120 adults, and then about 60 to 75 kids there. We just have to turn them away because we don't have any more room. And so this
started happening about 2 years ago, and it's just terrible to look at a Muslim and say, "I'm so sorry, but you can't come tomorrow because we don't have a chair for you," even though you would be hearing the gospel if you did.
And we meet in a church, and they just say, "Like we're coming to the church. Like we need help from."
They all call us the church.
Yeah. And Pentecostal
Hispanic church, so not gonna meet your needs. So anyway, that's kind of why we started looking into purchasing a building, and then we ended up with this piece of land that was less than a mile from where we were, so it was perfect. We closed on it a couple months ago, and we're in the middle of fundraising to build a building on it. And once that's done, it will function for all the stuff that we're currently doing, so all of our, you know, education, acculturation ministry, but also it will become more of a community center, because right now we rent for a few hours and then we leave, and it's not good. I mean, we need to be there in the community more of the time so that they can come anytime they need help. So we'll be there for that, and we also are in the plans of having a church that will be able to meet there as well. So we're really excited about that. We do have some refugees who... we are pretty sure are believers, but we don't have a place to send them. So sometimes we do have connections with ethnic churches that we can send them to sometimes. There's 5 Sudanese churches in Dallas, so we have also some pastors that come out and meet refugees during the day when we're helping them that are speaking, you know, their languages. And so we do have some of them have connections to churches that are kind of appropriate for them to worship at, but some of them don't if they're not that many Christians from their culture. And so that's another kind of thing that we're planning to have meeting in the building is a church where they can worship all together internationally, just like we do at English class, in probably English, but in easy English that's appropriate for what they're coming into. There's a lot that I think would come to that, but we just don't have a place to send them yet. Does anyone else have any questions? Yes.
What is employment like for these folks? Are a lot of them unemployed, or the ones that are employed, do they just take certain types of jobs, or is there a broad spectrum?
A lot of them are employed, but so it's kind of transient employment a lot of times. They'll come in and start in a job that's not in the profession in which they were trained, and so they won't like it, so they're trying to look for how can I transfer my degrees so I can do what I was doing before. We have a lot of people who are working like the night shift or second shift, a lot of households where two parents work, but they can't afford childcare, so they will like, mom will go to work, dad will go to work from, you know, 8 to 5 and then get home, and then mom will go to work from 6 to, you know, 4 a.m. or something. And so we do have a lot of people employed. Some of the mothers are not employed because they're taking care of children, but I would say most are employed. And we help them with those also. We have a lot of, like, staffing services in the community that contact us when they have job openings, and so we'll advertise those to refugees and try to help them connect to jobs. So we help with filling out applications and getting those resources and sharing them with the refugees and trying to make sure that we refer good people to the staffing, you know, and businesses.
People want to hire refugees many times out of altruism, and it's like, yeah, but they may not have the skill set. Mm-hmm. So, like, the Sudanese, like when we started 10 years ago and had a lot more Sudanese, like they were great at like working in a chicken plant, but like trying to get them to like mow your yard, like this is, they'd never even
used a lawnmower. Right.
Whereas like our refugees from Iraq, like many of them are professors and doctors, and we have a
college educated.
We have an elected official, and it's like, and they're not great at assembly work, right?
Because yeah.
I'm not great at assembly
work. And nor do they, I mean, that's really hard for them. We had two ladies go back to Iraq because they were highly educated and they could not even get jobs at Walmart. And so that doesn't happen very often, but it does occasionally happen,
but
because
like,
it's a hard transition.
Like, you're going to die if you go back.
Yeah. But at least I'll be working, you know? And so that doesn't happen a lot, but it has happened, because just from that really highly educated place, it's a hard transition into like the entry level jobs. And that's why it can be transient, because I'll do it for a while and then be like, okay, I need to work towards getting back into the field I was working in my country, you know, which is, that's what I would do.
America,
I mean,
doesn't have a great process for switching other people's education. You're starting over at ground zero here. Meaning that
your credits don't always transfer from your...
Whereas if you went to Iraq, our credits would transfer.
Yeah. That's one thing that surprises refugees a lot. They think, because I have these skills and certifications, I'm going to be able to do that job here in America. And some of them will be like, I did this job in Russia. I don't understand why I can't do it here in America. And it's like, oh, I know. It seems weird that you can't do that. So it's hard sometimes. But they do work, most of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you explain your timeline? In the morning, and how you divided up, because I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
A gospel presentation is in the middle,
mm-hmm.
not the end.
Right.
Sometimes we tack stuff on at the end,
mm-hmm.
and that's not the best time to do it. Is
yeah.
there a strategy behind that?
Oh, yeah, we did that for that reason.
Yeah. It took us 3 years to figure
that out. Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Because we kept being like, we don't want them to leave, but we also don't want to be like, you have to sit. Like, we don't want to be mean also, but we also don't want them to leave. Yeah, you're going to hear the good news right now. So that's why we started putting it in the middle, because it's like almost no one leaves. It's 2 hours total with the 15 minutes of Bible in the middle.
And Caitlin, if you remember how that started, was that like we realized there was no perfect level 2 student. Like we found like some people had been here for 5 years and they couldn't write their names and they could speak perfectly and they ruined all the questions for the people that like they could write really well, like the people from Iraq, but they can't communicate verbally at all.
It was the difference between literate people and illiterate people.
Yeah.
So the literate refugees, you know, like if you were going to learn a new language, you'd be able to read and write pretty quickly because you understand literacy. especially if it had the same alphabet, right? If you're going to, but if you've never been to school and you're going to learn a new language, then you have to learn like the system of writing. You have to learn literacy as well. So we had some refugees that were literate and some that were not. And so we started dividing up our classes and the first hour focusing more on literacy. So like I teach a level one class. In my class, I have a few students who speak beautifully, but they can't read a document or write their, like, even just their last name. And so we're working on literacy the first hour, and then they're going to move up to a, you know, speaking class that's like level 3 or 4 the second hour because they can speak. They can. Not all of them do, but they can do that if they need to. So because they were switching like that, we just stuck Bible right in the middle so that they would go to their literacy, go to the Bible, and then go to their, like, the speaking, listening portion. And some of them are stay in the same level, you know, but just they can switch if they need to.
It's a break time, and it's also the community time, and that's where...
Yeah, they talk, and...
And the reason why we have so many students is because it's a felt need. Like, they believe they need this. If we tried to have a class on finances, they don't come to those because they don't believe that they need them. And so it's doing activities that they believe that they need, mm-hmm. and then telling them actually the hope that mm-hmm. we all need.
Right. Telling them, like, you need English, but we really need Christ, actually.
Which is why some groups have said, like, oh, why do you work that in? And it's like, well, because these people have seen some of the darkest of humanity for our day and age. Mm-hmm. And they need to hear, like, they're looking for more than just letters and numbers to fill up why is all this bad stuff happening. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very natural connection for us and, like, why yeah. we do that.
Yeah. Do you have a question?
So at our ESL, mm-hmm. we have, I think, a really strong, large group Bible time, mm-hmm. but we are weak on the small group, more one-on-one. A lot of, Brother, what you were telling us mm-hmm. that you're doing, mm-hmm. that's where we're weak. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out how can we do that, because the large mm-hmm. group is great, mm-hmm. and I think it's that formal part that you're saying mm-hmm. needs to be there, mm-hmm. and we're struggling with the informal part. Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas on that?
What? How are your volunteers? Yeah. Like, do you have volunteers that are involved?
We do, and they come and then they leave. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, they're there. They come from all over town, mm-hmm. and then after their 2 hours or whatever is over.
Mm-hmm. To have any of them developed relationships to, like. Like, many of our volunteers get invited into homes of refugees and visit them. Does that happen at all?
I haven't seen
that. Okay. Lots of them will come to be teachers with us because they're wanting to engage a community, and so then they start being a teacher, but then also doing stuff in their own homes as well.
Or going, you know, many of them start going to refugee homes, really, yeah. like that. So if you encourage that maybe in your training of, like, we want you to be here, you know, once a week, but we really also want you to develop that relationship and go into homes after... You know, or invite them into your home if they need it. The volunteer might need to take the first step, you know.
And this is where, though, just because we have a high value on education and that, but also on theology, is that then that also means that whoever is organizing that needs to know what those volunteers believe. Like, they need to know,
yeah.
Are they really Christian, right? Or are they just saying I'm Christian and
I
want to help?
Believers.
Yeah.
Like, they're all strong
believers. Yeah, yeah. yeah. So I would encourage them to get to know the students outside of class. We've also done some different, like, you know, we have all the holiday events and stuff, too. So that's a great way to get churches involved, where it's like, come to the Thanksgiving party, come to the Christmas store, come to the Easter party. And, you know, it's just more casual. And so that's a good way to get them involved. We don't have done, like, Saturday out. Do yours come from, like, the same apartment complex?
No, they're all...
All around?
Well, there's several complexes.
Okay. But... Are there concentrations of groups inside apartment complexes where you could go to that apartment and do an event?
I think there are. Uh-huh. And, yeah, there's actually ministry doing that. And uh-huh. We're starting to partner.
Okay, yeah.
And that's really good.
I think that can help, too, because it's like we bring churches into the apartments. Yeah. And once you're there, you're, you know, doing a VBS with the kids. You're meeting the family. They're inviting you in for tea or water, you know, and it just naturally kind of happens out of that.
That's where we also kind of say outsource what you can't do. Like, if it's like, you know, we don't really have the people to do that, but this ministry is doing it well, yeah. then partnering up with them
yeah.
is probably the right step. And then,
and also, some of our volunteers who can't be involved on a weekly basis for whatever reason, they're more interested in those other opportunities. So it might even be a different group of volunteers where it's like, okay, we have 20 people who are coming every week, and then we have 20 people who can't come during the week, but they're going on Saturdays once a month to do something. Or, you know, if they're working from 8 to 5 every day, they can't come and teach an English class from 9 to 11. But those people you try to plug in, either welcoming a new family, or maybe in your case it could be like helping meet a need of a family that you think is legitimate, you know, and doing something like that, or going to the apartments on Saturdays, or doing events. Like, sometimes volunteers that can't be involved in one way could be involved in another way, and that might be more conducive to relationships, potentially. Ideas? I don't know. Yeah.
And you haven't mentioned what Sarah does.
Yes. Sarah, wait. So she's in that acculturation. Yeah, we have three Sarahs.
So I don't know. That type of person might be...
Yes. That's right. So we have two people on staff who are focused on acculturation. So they're not one. Sarah is not a teacher at all. That's what she does full time. We have another guy who teaches, but he also speaks Amharic. So it's an Ethiopian and sometimes Eritrean. Yeah, I know. So he helps do acculturation for Amharic speakers. Both of them are doing a lot more of the, like, they're almost like social workers too. Like, they're doing home visits. They're helping with like plethora of needs that arise, just, I mean, so many different things. And so maybe having someone allotted to, okay, you're going to work with the ESL students as kind of a counselor, you know, not in the, like a school counselor, not in the counseling type counselor, but, you know, you're going to assess the needs of the students that are coming to ESL and say, oh, I think this person's interested in Christianity. Let's visit this person. You know, let's take the Bible and read it with them. I think this person really needs food. Let's get them food. You know, like, maybe that could be an idea. That's Sarah. You know, that's how she and Michael work for us. Yeah, it's a great idea. That's right. Yeah.
That's easy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I will say, like, being in the community really helps. We live in the community as well, and our daughter goes to school with about six of our refugee families. And it's really neat because when I pick her up from school every day, I see those kids whose parents aren't there because they're working, you know, and I say to the kids, how was your day? Did you do a good job? Do you need help with your homework? And so that being in the community really does make a difference, too.
Speaking of apartments, I assume that these folks are not just put in random apartments around town. Are there particular apartment, maybe companies, real estate companies that host?
Basically, it's whoever the resettlement agency can form a relationship with, those are the apartments where they're put. So they have to, they kind of get, sometimes I think they get like bulk rates where it's like, we're going to resettle, you know, 25 families here, give us your best rate. And they will, because the resettlement agency is paying for the first month of rent. The apartment complex has to be willing to, like, let the resettlement agency sign the lease for the refugee who's not present. And so that's kind of a weird thing that not all apartments will do also. So it's kind of like whatever complex is willing to do that, they'll resettle refugees into. They're always looking for more partners, like, to where to put refugees.
And many people are like, oh, isn't it just government housing? And that's where like, no. There's a 3-year wait list to try to get into government.
So do you guys actually get the list of these apartments, or do you just have to find them?
There's not, like, a master list, because there's three resettlement agencies all working with different complexes. Oh, that's always changing. They don't communicate with each other. And then the people move. And so, I mean, we have a pretty good idea. We have all of the addresses of all the people that we work with, so we have a pretty good idea of where they are, right? We are just kind of sometimes, oh, look, there's a new family in this complex. And then you go and you're like, oh, there's three families here, you know, and then it grows. And
all of our advertising is word of mouth, which makes the gospel presentation a lot easier. When I go to the large Afghani's man store and I'm like, would you like to come to my English class? I'm going to tell you about Jesus. You know, like, I don't get the best response. But when it's his large Iraqi, you know, Afghani friend who's brought him, then it's like, what are you doing here?
You know? And, like, he's on the hook to explain, like, to his friend why he brought him to a Christian church that's telling him about Jesus. And it's like, not my problem. I don't. It's good. It works. It helps. We've had that. Sometimes we have had, like, a guy start kind of praying to Allah in the middle of a Bible lesson before. I mean, it's not.
Right next to him is like,
it's like, shh. you know. And we've had the some of the sometimes they have like their ringtone as like a call to prayer. So we've had like call to prayers go off randomly.
Yeah.
But you just kind of power through and.
And it's pretty, like that's a nice thing because we see him every day. It's like there's, you know, an issue one day. It's like I'm gonna see you today and the next day and the next day and it's like
right.
And we'll, just like anyone that we have issues with, you know, like you work through them.
Yeah, it's being there consistently.
Yeah.
You can, yeah, it always wins.
But your Bible presentation is not like standing at a pulpit with a book.
No.
So if all those things happen in the middle, I mean, I almost wish you could give a demonstration.
That's right.
You'll have to come see. That's right. You'll have to come see. Yeah. All right. I'm sure we're getting close to time. What time is it?
I don't know. 4:15.
Yeah, it's time. Thank you all very much. We appreciate it.